Hey there, Pounders. This is J.R. Wilco with this week's Unnecessary Foolishness. It's episode 37 of the Superfluous Poppycock Podcast. I'm here with my good friend Seth Warren, and we have a number of things ready to talk about, not the least of which is the Death Star losing KD for at least 4 weeks from that MCL tear he got when he was flopped on by his own man. What do you think? What do you think, Seth?
I love that it occurred via Zaza, because it just further enforces the notion that Zaza is garbage and a worthless human being. Maybe that's just me, but I can't stand Zaza in any way possible. So the fact that he pretty much crippled their chances, or at least severely impacted their chances for the rest of the season of either winning it all or retaining the number one, is sweet justice to me.
Sweet justice?
It is. I'm glad
you're acting like something is something unjust has happened that needs to be remedied.
I don't even know how to respond to that without just being clickbait, but yeah, I'd say a slight injustice has happened. Not one that it's worth fighting about,
there you go.
But one that everyone in the nation will be excited to see fall.
I think it's more like comeuppance than justice, but I can't say full-on comeuppance because they haven't received anything yet. They still have the one seed. We can talk about the one seed in a second. They still are in the driver's seat. They still are... They expect to have him back to be able to look at him in 4 weeks and find out what he's capable of doing. But I'm going to ask you, what does Kevin Durant's injury mean for the San Antonio Spurs?
My first analysis when this came out, you actually told me. It came out from nowhere, and you texted me and said, Kenny went down. And I went, no way! And it was like two kids just excited to hear some news. But my first impetuous response is, yes, that helps us. But the more I look at this and the more I think about this, I think it does absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
For San Antonio Spurs. I think it does nothing. In fact, I don't necessarily see the positive because I see, and this is obviously best case. I mean, we're assuming 4 weeks. You know, the latest news says that 4 weeks will be the eval. Could be longer. Could come back at 4 weeks. But 4 weeks is where we're going to eval him, and we're going to shoot for 4 weeks. It might be 8 weeks. It might be six. They say he's going to be back for the playoffs. Hopefully, air quotes. So there's a lot of uncertainty here. But operating on rosiest scenario that he comes back in 4 weeks, you've got a Kevin Durant that is rested after 4 weeks. And again, I don't see this Golden State team versus this Spurs team, because we've talked endlessly about my perception of the holes in this year's Spurs team. This year's team and our holes, I don't see Golden State dropping dramatically in the standings to specifically a San Antonio, much less a Houston, even without Durant. So essentially, you've just bought 4 weeks of rest for Durant going into the playoffs, which goes back to me saying I don't know that this helps anybody. I think this might be a much worse situation than everyone's covering.
Well, I don't even necessarily feel like it helps the Spurs, even if it helps the Spurs. Right, the first thing that I saw so many people talking about as soon as this happened was, well, maybe the Spurs will go for the one seed. Maybe they'll get the one seed. I don't want the one seed.
I don't either.
No, I like the two.
Yep.
I like the two. You practically avoid the Clippers at that point. And you're going to have to play the Rockets eventually anyway. You have to play the Warriors eventually anyway. But like I whined about incessantly last podcast, you know, still terrified of the Clippers, even though, and we can talk about the game, we will talk about the game, even though we got to see a wonderful win in Los Angeles against the Clippers. It's still, I want the two seed. I like the two seed. And
but
so
you're picking your poison. You've got Houston on one side. You've got the Clippers on the other.
Yeah, but there's at least someone for Kawhi to guard. We don't have to go through all this again. I don't mind playing Houston. I mind playing the Clippers. I think the numbers, and I think having someone for Kawhi to guard makes a huge difference in that matchup. And besides, just Chris Paul early in the playoffs is just Spurs kryptonite. But I was talking to Chris Itz, living in San Antonio, covering the games from the AT&T Center when they play at home, except for last night he had a conflict. I was talking with him about this. He still thinks that Golden State is tops, and you know, assuming that he comes back, he's not convinced that KD will come back. He's like, they're going to reevaluate him. At this point, I'm assuming that he will come back. Again,
the season?
KD will come back this season. I believe he will.
But that's the argument? Is it people are not sure he'll come back this season?
It's not that there's an argument. It's that Chris is not assuming he'll be back until he's back. I'm assuming that he's coming back until they say he's not. It's just a difference in assumptions.
Yeah, that's where I am, too.
No, I'm with you on that.
Right. And so he's like, wow, he's like big news, right? And I'm like, I'm not sure. I'm like, why do you feel like it's big news? He's like, well, then that gives the chance for someone besides the Warriors to win. And I'm like, well, I always felt like there was a chance.
There's two teams have a really good chance this year.
And he says, well, what do you think the chances are? I'm like, well, you know, 15-20% Cavaliers and like maybe 10-15% for the Spurs. And he's like, what is that, before the injury or after the injury? And I'm like, that's interesting. I thought about those odds before he was injured, and I didn't change them after he was injured, because the fact that there was a chance for a Warriors injury was part of my calculation in that. So I didn't have a new calculation. But the point is that it's, in my mind, you know, still about a 10-15% chance for the Spurs, even now that KD's been hurt and we don't know whether he's coming back. We don't know. Again, I'm assuming that he will. But I prefer not to have the number one seed. I don't care if it's just 10% chance. A chance is a chance, and the team's playing well right now, and they're tracking pretty close to their best ever record in the first year without Tim Duncan, and I'm going to take it.
No, I'm with you, and I just don't. Again, there's been so much made on over this injury, and I get it. It's a huge story. It's groundbreaking how it just really just takes over the news cycle. But this is still a team, even without Kevin Durant. This is still the team, sans Harrison Barnes, that won 73 games. I mean, we don't. All of a sudden, the juggernaut is crippled, and we're gonna. You know, so many teams can take advantage of that. That's just not true. They're still going to be a dynamic. I doubt they're going to lose the one seed. I don't know how Kerr feels about that. I personally don't believe that Pop really cares. After near 20 years, I don't think he cares about the one or the two. I mean, granted, I think he cares versus the eight seed. He'd rather be the two than the eight. But I think when it comes down to it, I don't think Pop's a guy that's ever going to fight tooth and nail and, you know, sell the farm to get that number one seed. And that, in conjunction with the fact that Golden State is really not going to slip a whole heck of a lot, their schedule's not that tough the rest of the year, I really don't think this helps much. We need to talk about the negative impact of this in terms of, okay, now we rested Kevin Durant. I mean, you look at how spry and how great Powell looks for us since the All-Star game. Right, granted, three-game sample size, but he looks incredible. Imagine that incredibility on Kevin Durant after a month worth of rest and some hostility, some anger, some wanting to prove something after a month out. I mean, it's I think this should scare everybody even more. And obviously, Kevin Durant or no Kevin Durant, other teams are making moves. Houston is trying to go all in to grab anybody and everybody, but they can't get anybody because nobody wants to go play with Harden. Cleveland, I love the moves Cleveland made this week for them. I mean, they verbally inked Bogut. They verbally inked
Deron Williams. Yes.
I mean, they've got their backup point guard who was at one time an all-star and is a sniper. They've got another big body that can bang down low that knows the Warriors inside and out and is looking for retribution. I mean, I think those two pickups alone, to me, push Cleveland over into the favorite category. I truly believe, even with or without Durant, Cleveland is favored at this point in my book.
Well, you got Matt Barnes being signed probably done now for the Warriors. So I mean, both of those teams have strengthened themselves right there at the trade deadline or with the waiver wire, and it's not a done deal, obviously, until it's done and announced. But there's not any rumors about any of that kind of stuff happening for the Spurs. So, you know, obviously we've got, well, what do we have? Oh, we've got Dwayne Dedmon starting, even now that Pau Gasol is gone. And I seem to remember, Seth, can you refresh my memory? Is it did either of us say anything about that?
No, I think
of the season?
It was so weird because I think of all the entities out there that were calling for Dedmon to start over Pau, I want to say Superfluous Poppycock was the earliest and loudest.
Definitely the most repetitive.
Wrong, but I'm not.
Definitely most of the most repetitive. I'm sure I've said something about it about 20 times. And even when I was trying to convince myself that I could be satisfied with Dedmon just closing, goodness, he's just playing so well with the starters right now.
Not well enough for a large new contract next year, but he's doing okay. He's doing all right. I mean, we're happy with him. He's doing all right. Let's keep this on the reel. Let's not play ourselves by overselling Dedmon and then having to retract those words as a PR venture this summer. So let's just keep things real low key on Dedmon at this point.
Keep him very low key.
He's okay. He's a system guy.
Yeah, right. Obviously, not anybody that anyone else would want to sign.
Anyone from any other team, any other fan base. I mean, think about Dedmon. It's like Danny Green. You don't want him. Look how many times he was cut. Hell, we cut him several times. Dedmon is that same guy. We felt bad about him. You know, Pop owed him a favor. We gave him a shot. He's doing okay. But just look elsewhere for your big man needs this summer, please.
Man, he's playing. His numbers with those starters are frightening, frankly. They're frightening. Right now with the starters, the net rating is almost 19 points in 138 minutes. That's not nothing.
No.
Right?
No, and he gets off the ground, he plays defense. It's been a revelation to watch him contribute this year.
The threat of his lobs on offense stretches the defense more than if he was as much or if not more than if he was a three-point shooter himself. And the way he plays defense, okay. So I'm gonna just dive straight in from talking about Dwayne Dedmon into talking about the Clippers game. The number of times that he had to switch off on Chris Paul and Paul didn't light him up, didn't drive past him, didn't shoot,
still
had a hand right in his face.
Now
he made a share of jumpers, but goodness, that was phenomenal and a huge reason why I think the Spurs were able to win that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it goes back to last offseason. There were so many people that, you know, did not understand. Was it last year? Maybe it was 2 years ago. I don't even it all blurs together. When DeAndre Jordan did his hold up in the house playing video games and ignore the door and, you know, run around and play chase with Mark Cuban and all of this little juvenile millennial crap that happened when he, oh, no, I'll come to doubt. No, I won't. No, I'll come to all of that kind of stuff that changed the culture in a lot of ways of the modern day character of the NBA. There was a lot of question about, well, you know, why are they going? I mean, this guy's good, but he's good because he's tall and he's athletic. I mean, what else? You know, why are they going so hard? This is exactly why the Clippers went all in on DeAndre Jordan. Exactly, because he changes their game and their offense so much. He opens. We would not know the name of J.J. Redick. The guy would not have a career per se, or at least what he does in the NBA, were it not for the impact of DeAndre Jordan and those lobs from Chris Paul. Yeah. DeAndre and Chris Paul are so symbiotic in that they need each other to be successful, but DeAndre's presence on the floor makes the Clippers a strong team. We're experiencing, as Spurs fans right now, the same phenomenon, because as you just touched on, other teams see Dedmon, they can't sag too far off of Dedmon to address our shooters because they don't want to get lobbed over and posterized.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really opened up a new aspect to our offense. And you know, like I said too earlier, trying to get in there, the offense is beautiful. I love the defense. The fact that he is locking down the paint in a lot of ways is just, we just didn't expect it. We didn't expect it at all from a guy cast off from Orlando.
We didn't expect it. Nope. But this is one of those times. I almost feel like I'm able to, like, you know, sit back and say, I told you so. Like, not only that he would play so well with the starters, but that he needed to start, and that he would play well based on what I saw from his work prior to coming to San Antonio. Anyway, it's just, it doesn't matter if I saw it.
No, you can take this. Yeah, you can have this. You can own this, and you should own this. And if DeJounte was not in the rookie doghouse, Pop's rookie doghouse that he was, yeah, I would be on a pedestal owning DeJounte right now. Trust me.
So we talked about the Clippers game a little bit. Do you want to talk about the work that DeJounte put in and the difference between what he did in the first half versus the second half?
Yeah, he looks a little more he looks like a company man now, doesn't he?
Oh my goodness, so Pop called a timeout and DeJounte had the ball in his hands, and DeJounte hadn't even really done it, like the last defensive possession, the last offensive possession. Again, this is Wednesday night in the Pacers win, in the Pacers thriller. But DeJounte had the ball and was letting it go after the ref had blown the whistle for a Spurs timeout. And DeJounte's right around the lane walking over to Pop, and he like holds his hands up like, oh, okay, I know. Right. You're going to chew me out. And it was just, that was the first half. And then in the beginning of the third quarter, Patty Mills came out. So DeJounte started the game. And right, at the beginning of the third quarter, Patty Mills came out, and then it wasn't until well into the second half before DeJounte got out there. Actually had a nice stretch, actually, you know, made some things happen, had some nice feeds to LaMarcus, had a feed, I believe, to Dedmon as well. And then Kawhi, who had gotten a little bit of foul trouble, came in, and Kawhi had the ball, and he didn't do anything in, I think, two straight possessions, and then Kawhi just went and took it from him on the next one, and the next six six straight possessions. I mean, Kawhi started the game off 3 of 10, and then made 8 of his next 10 shots. And then on top of that, he went ahead and hit that game winner over Paul George, and just was gorgeous, just made things happen. So that was so much fun. And also, DeJounte Murray was in the game.
Yeah, he saw some court time for the first time in a while. Yeah, it was a beautiful game. It's actually been a pretty effective, unless your name is LaMarcus, it's been a pretty good stretch of games since the All-Star break.
We've done well.
I know, and I'm sorry to get back on that LaMarcus bus that just backs over him and pulls forward and backs up. I just don't want to do it. But again, it's gotten to where I check the box score and I look at the impact he made. I look at the plus minus. I look at the points. I look at the point. You don't like it when I do this because, oh, it's not money based. It's all about value. It's somewhat money based for me when a guy gets 6 points a game.
I love the voice you choose to make to put my words in. That's fantastic. Keep it up.
If a guy scores 6 a game and he's getting 15 to 17 a year, you're going to hear from me. It is a little bit about money at that point. Jonathan Simmons is making peanuts, played 10 minutes the other night against Indiana, didn't give you any points. I'm frustrated with that. We need more from Jonathan. I'm nowhere near as frustrated at Jonathan's 0 as I am at LaMarcus's 6 versus Indiana. Thaddeus Young was his defensive assignment, and he scored 6 on the offensive end. In 31 minutes, no less. Second highest minutes total he's played since the All-Star break. He had plenty of rest at the All-Star break to tweet, to, you know, to Tinder, to try, all of that. So he had plenty of time to get out there and play on his social media accounts. You'd think he'd be more well-rested, but that's my rant on LaMarcus right now. I'm done.
5 of 15. You're done? Or you I'm mean done. This podcast, right? This podcast, you're done.
That sentence was done.
5 of 15 for 15 points, 11 rebounds against the Clippers.
Yes.
Against the Lakers, 8 of 14 for 16 and 9 rebounds.
Yeah, shot a blistering 57%, which, considering he's a big man in the paint, I don't know if that 57.
Wait. Consider he's a big man. Who says he's in the paint? I don't remember.
Well, and that's my irony. That's the point. He shot 57% on deliberately walking 16 feet out and hoisting up fadeaways. So we'll give him the 57%. That's
some
exciting.
Of them were just straight up jumpers. They weren't all fadeaways. That's what's amazing about him. Some of them actually should be. You may not realize this, but LaMarcus can actually score without fading away. It's amazing.
See, and some of them should be layups, I would contend. But then you go to the Indiana game and, you know, shot three for nine. No threes.
He had seven rebounds and two assists and a steal in his
two turnovers.
32 minutes. But he only shot nine times.
Right, right. And I don't know what your point is. Well, the 17 point million is, you shoot nine times, you ought to make quite a few of them. He made three of them.
The point is that the ball came to him a few times on Wednesday night. And
it's an offensive board. Okay.
No, he was past the ball, and he clearly did not want to shoot it. He wanted to find someone else to give it to. And the issue is, at this point, the man is in a slump. He's absolutely in a slump. It's you can tell it's affecting him, and so he doesn't want to hurt the team by shooting a lot of shots, because right now where he's getting the ball, where he's getting the ball is further outside from where he.
Then you might have to bang a little bit, LaMarcus, and that is my contention. Fair enough, you're in a slump. I will give you that. I will climb up off your ass for the fact that you might be in a slump. But you're a 7-footer with shoulders. Layups are sometimes easier to make than 16-footers. You want to break out of your slump? You want to rack some numbers? You want to help the team? Get down there and play a little bit of bully ball, because we need your points. We can't have Kawhi carrying us every night. I tell you what I don't like when I look at our box scores. Love Kawhi. Want to name my next child Kawhi. Hands down. I love that he's scoring in the 30s. I love that he's had 20-plus games in the 30s. That's incredible. I don't like that you go straight down the box score and it's single digit, single digit, single digit, single digit, single digit, single. That's not necessarily Spurs ball. Spurs ball is a lot more distributive. Spurs ball is a lot more multi-headed threat.
Yeah.
And you can't play that kind of game in the playoffs. We can't have 30-point Kawhi in the playoffs and single-digit everybody else.
It's a good thing we're not in the playoffs.
Well, true. True. But we might be, because Kevin Durant got injured. No, we're going to make the playoffs, clearly. I would rather us hold on to the 2 seed, and I don't want to see Kawhi have to carry so much of the load anymore.
I can't believe you got your LaMarcus rant in first, because I feel like I need to counterbalance that. I feel like I need to support him. And I don't want to. I want to rant about him too, but
why do you need to support him? Where is it written that this is Hannity and Combs? Like, why do we have to point counterpoint each other here?
Because of the last game before the All-Star break, and Bill and Sean interviewed him after the game, and they said, "Hey, you had a better game. You know, this game." He goes, "What, you mean then the entire rest of the rodeo road trip?" I mean, he was down on himself. He was obviously aware and embarrassed at the fact that he had played so poorly. And he was just he was self-deprecating. He had humor, but he was serious about it as well. And I was like, "Yeah, this guy is really hard to hate when he talks." Now, you know, when he's just on the court shooting over his right shoulder and spinning around and missing shots, then not working his way into the basket, not fighting, not being aggressive, it's easy. It's easy to hate on that guy. But as soon as he opens his mouth and he's an actual human, I'm like, "Huh."
No, and that's the difference between you and I. Me being a true sociopath, the intent does not – I don't look at the league at the end of the year to go, "Well, those Spurs, they had good intentions. Let's bump them up a couple of playoff slots." I don't look at intent to actually getting us anywhere. I appreciate – I would be a lot – no, to be fair, if he had Draymond's attitude of screw you and everybody else, then – I think I would be a lot harsher on him. So maybe that separates. Like. Yeah, the enormous amount of harshness that I feel is tempered by the fact that he's a good dude. But the harshness is still there because I need him to perform. If that six in the Indiana game, if there was a 2 in front of that 6, hell, even a 1 in front of that 6, I would be less harsh. Not how does he handle his post-game interviews.
Man, I find it really hard to hate on a guy that I can tell is taking it as seriously as he needs to, and is not satisfied and is in fact disappointed, right?
Well,
because
I
can't I can't tell any of that from the way that he plays.
He's not dead to me.
So he's not dead to you. But you and I have talked about this before, about how watching him play, it's frustrating because it looks like it's just, "Oh, missed that shot. I guess I'll take another jumper. I'll take a fadeaway this time. Instead of what we feel like he ought to do is like, you know what? The outside shot's not falling. The ball is in my hands. I'm going to bull my way to the basket this time. Right. Just not seeing that, right? And he was doing such a great job about that. We're just griping about LaMarcus again. Let's talk about
part of the reason that this is important is because of all the other things we've talked about. KD's injury. I'm going to tell you right now, Kerr and his staff are terrified that injury could metastasize into more. And they're terrified mainly in the West because of us. Because the front line matchup of LaMarcus and Powell, that's going to be a huge matchup problem for the Warriors if they're not playing with Durant. If you're playing Barnes and Draymond versus LaMarcus Aldridge and Pau Gasol, that's a nightmare for the Warriors. That's a 6-7 game series that quite possibly the Spurs win if LaMarcus is playing as a frontline player. If he backs off 20 foot, he makes it easier for Golden State. Because then you got a guy like Draymond that's having to guard LaMarcus. That's a pretty square, straight-up matchup. It's a pretty tough matchup for LaMarcus.
Agreed.
But if you pull Draymond down low and you play like the big you should be, then it eliminates this problem. But anyway, and like I said, LaMarcus is not dead to me. I own several LaMarcus jerseys. I'm fine with LaMarcus. I just need – if we're operating on so much of our payroll – because, you know, there's so much of a subculture right now of Spurs fans that are going, you know, we can't pay for Dedmon and Patty and Simmons and Powell this offseason. We can't do it. We're going to lose half our team. If you believe that, you ought to also be harsh on LaMarcus because of what he's getting per year and what he's contributing. I believe he'll turn it around. I have hope that he will. But until he does, I'm going to be that never-ending whining voice on the podcast to say, hey, guess what? LaMarcus scored 4 last night. I'm going to do that every time.
Will you always do it in that voice, though?
Yes, just in that voice.
I've got to turn the page on this. I've got to transition to Wednesday night, Spurs against Pacers, and the last 5 minutes of this game. When Kawhi scores at the 4.5 minute mark, at the 4 minute mark, with a free throw, or with a 3-point play at the 4 minute mark, with another basket at 3.5 minutes, mm-hmm. with the game winner, right?
I mean, which I resent, by the way. I don't like it when we call it game winners only because their official game winner fell short. I don't like it to be the game winner by default, but that's just
the difference between a buzzer beater and a game winner. He hit the shot with 2.7 seconds that forced them.
True.
Okay,
yep. That's a good point.
Okay, so but that's it. The only from last 5 minutes of the game, the only Spur to score. Shoot, is the only Spur to score in the last after David Lee hit a shot with 6:28 left, and like I said, he just grabbed the ball. And just made it happen over and over and over. And obviously made it happen with the team down 99-98 when they got the ball back with 8 seconds left. And it was just it didn't even say I wasn't even nervous as he was backing down Paul George. It was just all gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, at what point if you're an opposing team, and it is beautiful, like I said, I love Kawhi, just absolutely believe that he needs to be a front runner in the MVP discussion at this point. I don't think if you don't believe that, you're just an idiot, because all the numbers are there. There's no argument. But at what point are other teams just going to start doubling off? And because Kawhi's the guy. He's your 30-point scorer. Nobody else is really the threat on the Spurs. I mean, granted, you're concerned because their big men can score. Their outside shooters can score. You know, if you've got Patty in the game at that point, he can score. Tony could still summon some strength from beyond and can slash to the hole if needed. Danny Green's always out there in the corner. I mean, they've got threats, but Kawhi is pretty consistently their clutch guy. At what point do you start doubling him in those moments?
Tony Parker with strength from beyond. Is he like Doctor Strange now? Is he connected to the dark dimension?
Yeah.
Is that what's going on?
He'd need a week or two rest after that summoning, but he could summon that vintage Tony Parker streak to the hoop if we needed him to for a win. We just wouldn't have him for the next couple of games at full strength. I'm just saying he's a threat.
He's Yes, sure, sure. On alternate Thursdays, when the moon is full and the Spurs are wearing their gray uniforms at home.
Exactly.
And so, you're right. Anyway, but it's I mean, still love Tony, still believe that he can do stuff. It's just the team doesn't need it from him on a regular right. basis for him to have to use it, spend it during the regular season. But without a doubt, when Kawhi gets a lot of attention from the opposing defense, then the question is not just who else shows up, but how Kawhi gets them the ball. Getting them the ball in advantageous positions instead of just, okay, I'm not going to turn the ball over, let me pass it to somebody else, but then now they're right. stuck with the ball with, you know, 6, 7, 8 seconds left. As long as we get the right guys in the right position, as long as we can actually get an advantage from the opposing defense spending so much time guarding right. Kawhi, then it's great. I mean, the Spurs are the best shooting team in the league from beyond the arc. Yeah. Percentage wise, we don't take as many as obviously we don't take as many as sure we probably don't even take as many as the Pacers, right? Mm-hmm. Definitely don't take as many as Houston and Golden State does. But when we take them, we make them at a higher rate, and that's mm-hmm. huge because you want to have those guys standing there on the arc ready when people are collapsing on Kawhi. But also, there's so many different ways to get him the ball. He can go and get it. He can come from any angle, and that's. That's why it's such an awesome thing to watch this year, even if the ball movement isn't what it was in 2014.
Right. Well, I don't know what else you say about Kawhi other than he's just been absolutely incredible. And to imagine what he could do with a consistent superstar and in the second role behind him is what we could do. It just blows my mind.
Mind blown. So we talked about the Clippers game a little bit, talked about the Pacers game, have not mentioned the Lakers game, the Lakers blowout. Is there anything you want to do besides just like, you know, smirk and gloat?
You know me well, because I'm not a forgiving person. I've got narcissistic and sociopathic tendencies, perhaps even deep psychological issues. And the Lakers, along with the Mavs, the Lakers, and quickly the Clippers are joining this category too. The Lakers are one of those teams that I just don't. It's like when you beat a team that bad and they look that bad, you want to almost feel sorry for them. It's kind of like when you play like a Brooklyn, you just kind of want to, oh man, these guys, you know, Philly, oh man, imagine what they could do. The Lakers burn in hell. Like we cannot beat them by enough. So even though the pieces and the faces are all different, they're still that gaudy yellow and purple. And I'm just the hatred for the yellow and purple is so deep within me that we killed them. We put on a clinic. Next, I mean, I don't even know that, you know, the prevailing mindset in Southern California right now is, oh, yeah, in a couple of years, you know, Magic's really going to turn this around. I have no faith whatsoever that he's actually going to do that. And in turn, I'm actually really excited for him because they all have this false hope that's just distracting them from the fact that they're an absolute dumpster fire.
And that's part of
that they're going to continue. They're going to continue being a fire for sure in my book.
Part of that, what probably rankles you is just all of the interactions with Lakers fans over the years, though.
Well, it's not just the team. And the players and the front office and the bench. I mean, pretty much every aspect of the Lakers has burned me over time. But again, go back to that famous Sports Illustrated cover with Timmy: substance over style.
Man.
I'll always reside with that cover as it pertains to the Lakers.
You can see that cover from where you sit right now on your wall, yes?
I actually can. Substance over style.
Look at that. Yep. Good stuff.
Timmy goes up to block Kobe's shot, and it was high time for the Lakers. And I remember that series really well, especially because that's the one in which the cameras panned to the bench and showed Kobe and Derek Fisher and all of them crying on the bench when their three-peat, the dynasty was over thanks to the Spurs. And it was sweet justice.
There was definitely weeping. There may have even been gnashing of teeth. I'm not sure.
Very much so. If you want a good screensaver, pull that picture of Derek Fisher
with and the just tears.
Still shot with the tears streaming down his face, and save that on your computer.
Man, good times. Good times. I think we're ready to transition into superfluous poppycock. Do you have any unnecessary foolishness for
you
us
know,
this week?
I do, and the story's a little old, obviously, because it happened at the tail end of last week, early on in the week. But this whole, how much do you know about this Shaquille versus JaVale McGee feud?
I know that Shaquille O'Neal has won rings, and I know that he feels like that allows him to compare himself to people who have not won rings. I know that he also has a little bit that he likes to do regularly, which is Shaqt and a Fool. I believe he's targeted JaVale a number of times before. I think JaVale's made it easy for him.
Yeah, JaVale, it's you're making Shaq sound like this monstrous figure. JaVale has made it fairly easy for Shaquille. JaVale, Kendrick Perkins, various repeat performers in the Shaqt and a Fool segment. And first off, let me say, I have no love for Shaquille O'Neal. The character trashing that he enjoyed of David Robinson, in which he made it, his entire career made these comments, oh, when I was young and I was growing up in San Antonio, I loved David Robinson and I met him once and,
really tried to be nice and asked for an autograph and he just brushed me off and ignored me.
Never happened.
He said that his entire... No, it never happened. He came out after his career and said, oh, no, that never happened. I had to create these fights and these arguments to get myself revved up for games. So I don't like O'Neal. I don't like any part of him. I don't like how he picks on Barkley, it seems like, and he always goes back, like you said, to the, well, I got rings. I don't like all of that with the TNT segments. But the Shaqt and the Fool stuff sometimes can be funny. Now, I find myself very quickly allying up with Shaquille O'Neal. Because what ended up happening, they ran a segment on TNT, kind of a parody of Doctor Strange, featuring Shaquille O'Neal and JaVale McGee, and then let the Twitter sphere explode. JaVale has Twitter, congratulations, and he tweeted out a bunch of not suitable for work messages to Shaquille, essentially saying, look, leave me alone, get off, I've had enough. And called him several names that will not be repeated here. Some racial connotative names. Some very disrespectful to the female anatomy names. Whoa. And Shaquille, as punchers do, you don't punch a puncher. What's going to happen? So Shaquille punched back, and then it just escalated and escalated. Now, where I got into superfluous poppycock territory was when McGee's family got involved. Then it just got out of control because I rebel against this modern millennial society in which it's this PC culture of everybody's offended and I have the right to not be offended. And it doesn't matter if I'm one out of a million. You have to cater to me. So much of our society is built on a group of 5,000 people who all want to eat spaghetti and meatballs. But the one person that says, nah, I want sushi. So you have to all go get sushi for this one person. And that's exactly what we're dealing with here. Because Pamela McGee, his mom, told The Undefeated that Shaquille should be, quote, fired from TNT for cyberbullying her son. She said also, quote, this is straight up black-on-black oppression. And she also said, quote, we're becoming a nation where we now have someone in the White House saying it's now okay to bully and disrespect, end quote. So we're at this point now because your son sucks at basketball. Now we're talking about the president. We're talking about race relations currently in the nation. Really? Because your son sucks at basketball? I mean, it's all of this is such superfluous poppycock to me because the whole cyberbullying set me off. What is the definition of bullying? Using your power to assert your will to convert someone else or to change someone else's behavior? What is his mom doing by coming out and accusing him of cyberbullying?
Or by trying to get him fired.
And then his sister, who plays for the Chicago Sky, his sister came out and tweeted, quote, I can only hope that the NBA on TNT doesn't condone violence, internet threats, or bullying, end quote, which is a passive-aggressive millennial threat, as we've all learned. So all of this, I think Kenyon Martin had the absolute best quote on Fox's Speak for Yourself. He said, if you give me for material for 5 years, I'm going to make fun of you for 5 years. So a lot of guys are kind of realizing this, but just my superfluous poppycock is the entire exchange. I actually was disappointed that Shaquille came out and said, look, both our moms got involved. I'm not going to talk about JaVale anymore. I actually would condone Shaq ramping it up to a nuclear level and just unleashing hell on McGee at this point. Because I think the way McGee handled this was just so poor. You've earned the reputation you've gotten through multiple teams of failure and multiple teams of just comedic basketball behavior. Now you want a little bit of respect because you play for a good team. Well, you got to earn that. And your whole career has not shown any pattern of earning that. It doesn't matter how loudly Kevin Durant takes your side or Draymond Green takes your side. We know these guys are big talkers anyway. Earn your weight. That's all I'm saying for the superfluous poppycock.
Earn your weight. I love it. And it looks like that's going to do it for us this episode, Pounders. We'll see you next time. Until then, keep safe and let it fly.